Listeners, this week I'm welcoming back Rosemary McDonagh again, who is the IFA's Farm Business National Chair, to talk about other business matters that are of concern to the farming community. Good morning again, Rosemary, and thanks for joining us again this week.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your listeners. And again, thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
Yeah,
good to have you back. Now, you have issues with regards to, we're going to talk about three things very quickly, but the first one is you have issues with regard to the driver theory test at the moment.
Yes, at the moment there seems to be a little issue. So we are asking and trying to be lobbying for that the driver theory test must be classified as an essential service, because at the moment the government have decided recently not to classify the driver theory test as an essential service, and the suspension of the service until May the 4th at the moment. And really, that is impacting on, we'll say, farming and farm labour and crop and animal production, the farm release services, and the provision of support services relating to all the agricultural services that are specified in the government's list of essential services. So I suppose what we're asking for is that there's many, many young people out there, and even young lads, I suppose, and that would be their job for the summer, to go working with an agricultural contractor. I mean, it's a job for the young guys, and it's a labour service for the agricultural contractors. And because the driver theory test, which they can't be done at the moment, then there will be a shortage of this labour, because those young guys can't get their can't do the test.
Right. Okay.
There's a pro proctor remote testing option allows candidates for certain tests to take their driver theory test from the comfort of their own home. So I mean, we're saying that this test should be classed as an essential service, and that anybody who wants to sit it should be allowed to do the driver theory test from their own home.
Right, and that makes sense, you know, and you're definitely making sense with regard to the effect it's going to have on the normal running of farming in this country, because within a couple of weeks, we're going to have silage contractors and silage tractors and trailers running all over the place. And, of course, as you quite rightly say, it's usually young drivers.
It is, and it's an opportunity for those young drivers, you know, to get a job and to do some work for the summer. And it's a great opportunity then for the contractors as well, to be able to get the labour of those young people to be able to, as you said, drive the tractors, do the silage, do the baling, do the harvest. I mean, putting in silage, putting it up, whatever has to be done. I mean, it's all tractor work from now on for the rest of the summer. And those young people need the job. So to be able to have the licence and do things, you know, correctly, that they need to be able to do their driver theory test.
Okay, very, very good point. Now, the other point that you want to have a chat with me about is, and of course this is one that I brought up with you, and we didn't get an opportunity to talk about it last week, and that is the Fair Deal Scheme. I see that's just about to go to Cabinet.
Yes, we welcome that very much. Like the Fair Deal Scheme now has been on the go for many years. We have been pushing it as hard as we possibly can in IFA. It has got great progress, we'll say, in the last government, but because the bill lapsed when the government collapsed the last time, so it was, you know, put back a few steps. But now we've had several meetings with the Minister of State, Mary Butler. And we have welcomed the commitment from Minister Butler that she will bring the legislative changes to the Fair Deal Scheme. And this is that there will be a three-year cap placed on the farmland under certain circumstances. And this will be brought to the Cabinet. It's been brought to the Cabinet. And now there are many stages, I mean, as we know, but at least it's on the move. And the biggest point there is that at the moment, the way the law is, the farm has not been transferred for the 5 years of clear time. And that if somebody happens to need to go into a nursing home, then in the rules of Fair Deal, the land is taken in to the calculation in full forever for the length of time that the person is in the nursing home. So what IFA has been lobbying for, and hopefully it's just around the corner, that the land would be capped at 3 years, the same as a residential property or as a house. So that if somebody has to go into the nursing home and the land is still part of the calculation of paying for the nursing home in the Fair Deal scheme, then at least it's only a percentage of the land that's taken for 3 years. That's the same as the roof for the house.
And
that would be a great advantage if we could get to that stage.
Right. And am I right in saying then that the percentage that's taken every year is 7%?
I think it's 7.5% for 3 years.
Yeah, 7.5%. Yeah.
For 3 years, as far as I know. That would be the same for the housing and the land.
So
I suppose that the best advice to people really and truly is try and if at all possible, you know, to pass on the farm to the next generation, because there's a 5-year time there where the farm has to be passed on, a clear 5 years. But at least in a situation where if it's not passed on, for one reason or another, and if the 5-year time deadline isn't met, at least the whole value of the farm is not going to be at into if the new rule comes in, if the new change comes. That would be great news.
Okay, and the last thing we want to talk about this morning, Rosemary, is something that broke at the end of last week, and that is that the IFA are fighting for the processors to be able to make electronic transfers into farmers' accounts.
Yes, I mean, we've been pushing for this now as hard as we possibly can, and especially since the pandemic struck, because of, as we talked last week, all the changes that have been in the banking services and banking sector and branches, and, you know, not being as easy to lodge checks, and we'll say with restrictions and 5K and all those kind of things. So on that point, we are asking that EFTs, which are electronic funds transfer payments, should be made available from all of the processors to whoever is, you know, sending in products into the processors, to the farmers, that the money should come electronically into the bank account, because it comes from all your single farm payment and your other schemes. Any payments that you have from the Department of Agriculture, they all come straight into your account as a method of payment. So it's only fair that all the processors should give that facility to farmers to be able to sign up to get their payment straight into their bank account. Now, a lot of the marts are coming on board, and if farmers go in and bring in their bank details and look for it to be set up, it will. But we need the processors to come on board, and all of the processors. So that would be a very good advantage.
Right. And Rosemary, sure, that it makes just a sense that all the processors nowadays should be in a position to give that service to the farmers. Sure, it would make their life an awful lot easier. They wouldn't have to be writing out all these checks for every load of cattle that goes into, we'd say, a meat plant, or, for that matter, any co-op in the country, or, again, people that are dealing with their various farm merchants that are around the country, that we should all be able to make electronic transfers.
Yes, exactly. And the fact that checks are becoming that bit more expensive and they're going up in cost all the time, because I suppose really the banking industry wants to try and reduce the amount of checks that people are using, and therefore they need to be reduced, the amount of checks that farmers are being given. So also that even from the side of the processors, they'll have an advantage where they won't have the stationary. I mean, it's a manual exercise to do a check run, get them all signed, and put them in envelopes, post them out, put a stamp on them, and then somebody has to turn around about then and try and, you know, go back out again to go to the bank to lodge them, and the whole clearance and the timing of them. Yeah. So, I mean, on both sides, there would be an advantage that there's a cost saving. And especially these days with everybody, so many people pay online or pay with their card by Visa or Visa debit. And it would make so much more sense if farmers were paid straight into their bank account by EFT, and they wouldn't have to be going out looking for a bank to do the lodgement and to try and meet the bank times as well or whatever. So I think it would be a win-win on both sides if we could try and get electronic funds transfers into the farmers' accounts from the processors.
Okay, and I suppose there's one other benefit from it, and that is there would be an environmental benefit as well, because the farmer wouldn't have to get into a car and drive to the bank, and just adding more CO2 into the atmosphere.
Yes, that's the best side of it. And there'd be less trees cut down with all the paper that are used in printing off the cheques.
Of course. Yes. Yeah, without a doubt. Look, thank you ever so much. Three very good points you've made this morning, Rosemary, and it was delightful to talk to you again. That, listeners, was Rosemary McDonough, who is the National Chairperson for the IFA's Farm Business Committee. That, listeners, is Ag Report for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you will join me, Jim Finn, at the same time next week for another Ag Report on Tip FM. And before I go, may I wish you all a happy and safe holiday weekend. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock. And after that, Eamon O'Wire presents Down Your Way. Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. Now, later on in the programme, I will be talking to the Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConnellogue, TD. I will also be talking to Maeve Regan from Agritech there in Nina, and I will be talking to Rosemary McDonough, who is the IFA's Farm Business Chair. But my first guest this morning is Claire Mooney from Chagas. Good morning, Claire.
Morning, Jim.
Okay, now you want to discuss two things with me, Claire. You want to discuss the new REAP programme, or as we call it, REAP.
Yeah, basically, I suppose, Jim, it's the new environmental programme. It's a results-based agri-environmental programme, and it's a two-year pilot programme that will reward farmers for maintaining and enhancing the sustainability of agricultural grasslands, field boundaries and margins. And the department hoped to have about 2,000 participants taking part in this scheme.
That's open for application at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose the way you apply is you'd contact your local Chagas office. The closing date is the 10th of May. And really all it involves at the moment is filling out an expression of interest. And based on, I suppose, geographical location and different parameters the department will have in place, that will determine whether people get in or not.
I suppose it's something that most farmers should consider joining anyway.
Yeah, I suppose really anybody who's not in GLAS, the organic scheme, the hen harrier scheme or any other kind of an EIP, they're eligible to apply. Tillage farmers, however, aren't eligible to apply at the moment on this pilot.
It's only for certain categories of farmers. So in particular, I suppose, it would be very useful for beef or sheep farmers and, I suppose, some dairy farmers.
Definitely. Anyone who's not in a current environmental scheme should definitely consider it.
Right. Now, more importantly, and I suppose getting on to your own field in particular, you want to discuss the use of pesticides and, I suppose, pesticides versus water quality.
Yeah, I suppose over the last number of years, Jim, the number of exceedances in drinking water continue to increase. And the most common ones that are occurring are, I suppose, MCPA and 2,4-D. And the reason they're so problematic is they're very soluble in water. And I suppose they're widely used across the country. And I think the key thing we need to remember that is foil lid that's on the spray can, if that actually enters the stream, it has the potential to be found up to 30 kilometres away. Okay?
Right.
And the other two herbicides then that are causing big problems would be the glyphosates and the triclopyrs. Okay? Yeah. And these four herbicides accounted for 78% of all the exceedances in 2020.
That water, normally speaking, is going into rivers. And, of course, we're extracting a lot of our drinking water from rivers at the moment. So is that how it is affecting, we say, the drinking water in towns like Thurles, Nina, Rosscrea?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I suppose the last exceedances relating to Tipperary. There was two of them. One of them was in relation to the drinking water supplies there in Dundrum, and it related back to the use of MCPA. And then the most recent breach was the drinking water supplies up in Upper Church, and that was in relation to glyphosates.
Right. And so, you wouldn't expect it now to be in places like Upper Church.
I suppose not, but like there is a drinking water kind of group that monitor all this.
Yeah.
And last year was the first year they found an awful lot of, or a big increase in the glyphosate exceedances. So they're relating it back to, I suppose, two things: COVID, and people were at home, they had additional time in their hands, and there might have been a corner of the field or a corner of the garden that people normally ignored, but mm-hmm. idle hands and all that. So there was definitely an increased use of glyphosate last year.
Now, am I right in saying that these sprays are going to be going off the market in the next year or year and a half?
Yeah, there is a strong possibility that they will. And I suppose the alternatives that are there in terms of their effectiveness aren't wonderful. So, like, it's a twofold benefit. If we try and use them as best we can and as safely as we can, we'll guarantee, or we'll go a long ways towards guaranteeing their use into the future. And I suppose by using them safely as well, we'll also protect the drinking water supplies.
Right, so we're looking at something that is very useful to farmers on one hand, but is causing an awful lot of problems with our drinking water on the other hand. Claire, how then can we reduce the impact on the water bodies?
Okay, so I suppose implementing best management practice is the best mitigation advice we can give, and we can divide these into kind of three main areas. So the first one is the storage and preparation for spraying. The spray should be stored in their secure, store.
Yeah.
They should have the warning sign at the entrance. Potential leakages should be retained, and all the labels attached to the original containers. And the applicator of those sprays must be a trained professional pesticide user. And I suppose in turn, then you need to keep your equipment, keep it well maintained, have it calibrated properly, and have it tested every 3 years. And then I suppose discuss with your advisor as well, you know, the alternative methods such as topping, maybe drainage or soil fertility and sward improvement. So that's kind of the storage side of it. When it comes to handling it then, and this is where probably a lot of the issues arise. So first of all, use the PPE. Then minimise risks during transport. We all know accidents can happen. Always read and follow the label instructions. You know, use the correct rate at the correct time, and obviously for the correct thing, or you know, for the correct problem. Always use the approved application method for the chemical. Not all chemicals are approved for, we'll say, weed lickers. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose take care to avoid spills, you know, especially when handling the concentrated product. And ideally, sprayers should be filled where losses to water body cannot occur, and never fill the sprayer directly from the water course. So they're kind of the points in relation to the handling of the herbicides. And the last area then would be obviously when you're spraying. So the few tips that we would have on that would be, I suppose, obviously be aware of the location of water bodies on your farm. Big thing again is buffer zones with sprayers and with spray, and all the different products have different buffer zones. So everybody needs to familiarise themselves with those buffers on the labels. And I suppose then spray when conditions are suitable. You know, especially when using MCPA, there is absolutely no point going in when the soil is waterlogged, because that's only going to end up in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have spray done, triple rinse the container and add the rinse to the sprayer. And then in the field, spray off those tank washings, clean down the external parts of the sprayer. And I suppose the most important thing is don't discard the sprayer washings on a yard or a gravel area, because, you know, it has real potential to get into a water body from there.
And where would they discard the water that they washed the sprayer with? Out maybe on one of the fields they've already sprayed?
On the field they've already sprayed, or if they had one that, you know, was near the yard, they can do that as well.
Right, okay. You're saying that the replacements for these sprays are not going to be very effective. So there is going to be a problem in, we'd say, the years to come, and we're going to have to look for, I suppose, sprays that do not contaminate water.
Well, you could end up in the situation, Jim, that you might have no sprays. You might have no alternative to these. So you'll be back to your, you know, your more traditional methods, such as tapping, you know, maybe considering the application of lime, you know. So that's really what we're, we could be headed back to.
Okay, but you're also talking about sprays that are used on cereal crops.
That's it, yeah. That's
and,
it,
of course,
exactly.
That's going to have a detrimental effect if these sprays are withdrawn, and I know some of them are being withdrawn, if they are being withdrawn, you know, it will be very, very difficult tillage farmers in Ireland, given because of our climatic conditions, to be able to grow cereals.
That's it. That's it. It's an extra, I suppose, hurdle that people will have to jump to try and get the field ready for those crops.
Okay, so problems down the line. So your final tips then to my listeners this morning, Claire?
I suppose the final thing, Jim, would be, you know, maybe check with your advisor first. Is there an alternative? Do you need to go out with the spray? Make sure the weather is right. You're using the correct products at the correct rate and you're using the correct equipment. And I suppose be mindful of the buffer zones and be mindful of the pathways that lead to watercourses.
Okay, well, look, at thank you ever so much, Claire, for joining us this morning. That listener was Claire Mooney from Chagas here in Tipperary, talking about the REAP scheme first, and then she followed on that by pesticides versus water quality. Listeners, my next guest this morning is none other than the Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConnellogue, TD. And the Minister is joining me this morning to talk about a few things with regard to his department. Good morning, Minister, and thank you ever so much for joining us here this morning.
Good morning, Jim, and good to be with you. Thanks.
Okay, Minister, now there are a few things, I suppose, that the department are doing at the moment, but let's start off with the new REAPS scheme, please.
Yeah, so this is a new pilot environmental scheme, Jim, that I launched in the last week, and it's open for applications up until the 10th of May. And obviously, farm incomes is something that is a top priority for me since I've been made Minister for Agriculture just over 6 months ago. And with my ministerial colleague, Michael McGrath, I've secured an 11% increase in the overall agriculture, food and marine budget this year to support family farm incomes. And we're in a transition period at the moment from the outgoing common agricultural policy to the new one, which means that we were able to continue the schemes from the outgoing CAP, but it also offers the opportunity to run some smaller pilot schemes, which we can help then inform the new common agricultural policy, which will be starting in January 2023. And this environmental pilot scheme is a 10 million euro scheme, which will be open to 2,000 farmers. And I think it's a really farmer-friendly scheme which delivers in terms of delivering environmental outcomes. The two key measures in it is, for example, low input permanent pasture and multi-species sward, as well as hedge infill and the option for optional amount of broadleaf tree planting on verges and on hedges as well. But really importantly, alongside that, it can significantly contribute to farm incomes. So, for example, it runs between now and December next year. And over that period of about 20 months, there's the opportunity for farmers to draw down a maximum payment of just under 13,000 euro. Up to a maximum of 6,900 per year. So it's one that offers a really good opportunity to farmers to enhance their income, but also to take up measures which will deliver in terms of biodiversity and environmental objectives too. And I think it's a good reflection of the type of a partnership approach I want to take to meeting our climate ambitions in the time ahead, and to how we can contribute to tackling the biodiversity crisis, where farmers can play a lead role in that. But also it can be a really significant source of income for farmers too. And the learnings from this pilot scheme will then inform the new flagship agri-environmental scheme, which will replace GLAS and AOS and REPS, which were the flagship schemes before that. And the aim is that will be in place for the start of 2023, which is when the new CAP will start off.
And Minister, you must be encouraged by the uptake so far.
Yeah, there has been a very strong response from farmers. I think farmers have looked at it and seen that the scheme is a really practical one from their point of view, one that they can participate in without too much difficulty. It's payable in up to 10 hectares. And as I say, between now and the end of next year, there's the potential for a maximum payment over those 2 years of a cumulative maximum of €13,000. So farmers, I think, see that, and I think also reflected the fact that farmers have played a strong role and on an ongoing basis play a strong role in relation to their protection of the environment, but also are up for participating in schemes like this. And they see that this is a practical one and one that's well framed to their needs too. And certainly between now and the 10th of May, I expect a very strong response from it and then approvals to issue then to farmers shortly after that.
Okay, now, Minister, one thing that the farming organisations have been looking for a number of years is the food ombudsman.
This week, Jim, I have launched the public consultation so that farmers and farmer representative organisations and indeed members of the public, consumers and those at various levels of the food supply chain can give their views on how the establishment of a food ombudsman office can be done in a way that is as effective as possible. And really the need for this office comes from the fact that, as you say, for many years now, there has always been a strong sense that that it's really hard for farmers and primary producers in particular to see what's happening in the food supply chain and a real sense of not being able to get a fair crack of the whip in terms of the massive work they do to underpin our national food industry but not getting the income return for that. So that's why I'm setting up this office that will be independent, will have authority, will have powers, will also oversee unfair trading practice rules. And its objective will be to shine a light on the various aspects of the food supply chain in a way that can bring clarity to where the income, the different price margins are going, so that difference between what farmers are getting and what the consumer pays in the supermarket or before at the very final point, that can be clear. And ultimately, the objective here is to put every bit of pressure on we can and to ensure farmers are getting the best return that they can. So this consultation will now run up until the 26th of May, and I'm expecting a very strong response as well and lots of submissions. And then I will assess those together with the preparatory work that I've had the officials do here within the department, and then come forward with legislation then later on in the year to set up this new office.
Okay, Minister, and that's going to be extremely welcome. As you know, farmers have been looking for that for a number of years. Minister, you come from a fishing county yourself, and of course, fishing along the Western Seaboard is a very, very important industry. So have you anything you would like to say to the fishermen of the West Coast?
Fishing is a really important part of my brief, and obviously coming from Donegal myself as well, we really are at the centre of the national fishing industry, and it plays a really significant role right along the west coast, right down and along our coast, south coast and east as well. But I know it's really important along the west coast. It has had a challenge, obviously, and it worked very closely with the fishing sector in terms of Brexit, and there is a challenge there in terms of some quota loss emanating from that. And I worked very closely with fishermen and fishing representatives to try and ensure the sector would be as protected and represented as strongly as possible in those Brexit negotiations. And also, since that, there's now a task force which I've set up which is made up of those within the sector to advise both myself and the government and how we can invest in the sector now over the next period of time to maximise its potential, because fish is a tremendous food, it's a sustainable food, it's one which provides as well significant employment and which we can do really, really well. And there is additional opportunities there to create further employment in terms of how we add value to it, and also in the space of aquaculture as well, for example. So I'm looking forward to that task force reporting to me, and there's a very strong commitment then at government level and cabinet level to follow through in that and invest in it to try and grow it and maximise its value in the time ahead, and to build on what is there and what has been a tremendous traditional asset to this country, and to ensure that it remains that and develops on that base in the years ahead.
Minister, you mentioned task force there last few words. Of course, you had the 9th meeting of the Beef Task Force.
Yeah, and it's been carrying out important work, Jim, and I'm keen to see it come to a conclusion now soon. There's been 2 or 3 important reports which have been delivered in terms of market specifications and looking at price composition in terms of similar work, as opposed to what the Food Ombudsman Office will be looking at when it's fully established. Importantly here is trying to ensure that that in terms of farm incomes and the price that farmers get at farm gate level and from factories, that we do all we can to ensure they are getting a fair crack of the whip and proper payment for the work that they're carrying out. And I look forward now to it concluding, bringing those reports to the table, and also then ensuring that in terms of the engagement between farmers and processors in the time ahead, that there's clarity around specifications, that there's certainty around them as well, and also that we can build a level of transparency, working as well with the Food Ombudsman in terms of that relationship into the future. We've had a challenging times a couple of years ago in relation, or a year and a half ago now, in terms of the factory blockades we would have seen, and that's where the task force would have emanated from. And I want to ensure that the lessons from that are learned and that we build a really resilient beef sector, which ultimately has the need to provide strong incomes for family farms as our central objective.
Okay, and one last question, Minister, to you this morning. Climate action and low carbon, that's something that we're going to have to be dealing with over the next number of years. Have you any comment to make on that one, particularly as it applies to agriculture?
Yeah, well, every sector is going to have to play its part in relation to trying to reduce our emissions overall. And obviously, from a farmer's perspective as well, the environment and the climate is more important to a farmer than it is to anyone, because we very much work off the land. Climate events and weather events have an immediate impact on agricultural production. So we have a tremendous track record, obviously nationally, of producing food, not just for ourselves, but for export as well. And that's something that we will be continuing to do into the future. Alongside that, we will have a parallel eye in relation to how we can reduce our emissions and how we can contribute as a sector to addressing biodiversity impacts that we've seen in recent years too. And that's going to be a key focus of policy. It is the particular role of farming is recognised very much in the Climate Action Bill and specified as something that the Climate Action Bill will have to have regard to. But I know farmers are very much up for playing their role, and we recently saw the Foodwise 2030 strategy published, which all farm stakeholders played a strong part in relation to framing, and that outlines as well the commitment of the farming community to playing its part. And certainly I look forward to working with them in the time ahead. And I think the REAP scheme, for example, which we discussed earlier on, is an example of how we can a partnership approach can be taken, whereby farmers continue to lead and deliver environmental goods as well as producing high quality safe food, but also receive a fair income for doing that, and that's the really important thing.
Okay, well, look, Minister, thank you ever so much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was the Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Maeve Regan. And Maeve is with AgriTech in Neenah. And she's with me to talk about a little bit about grass management, but also she's going to talk about the upcoming silage season, which isn't that too far away. We'll be all out cutting in less than a month's time. Good morning, Maeve, and thank you very much for joining us. It's good to hear your voice again.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Thanks a million.
Yeah, how are you getting on down there in AgriTech?
All going well. I suppose we're just moving through the grass season now, really. We've been focusing on reseeding the last few weeks, and that's ongoing. And again, focus will shift now towards silage season the next couple of weeks. But all very growth dependent at the moment. Growth has been quite sluggish and slow, but we're hoping with the forecast of a bit of water and heat that might change in the next couple of days.
Well, it needs to change in the next couple of days. There's quite a few farmers in Tipperary and surrounding counties are struggling a bit at the moment for grass.
Yeah, absolutely. So growth has been quite slow, and grass has been quite cold stressed. You kind of see a bluish purple hue almost on the tips of the grass plant itself out in the field. And that is just the plant being quite cold stressed. Growth has been slow. It's been kind of borderline 30, 35 kilos of dry matter per hectare if you look at pasture-based Ireland data.
Yeah.
Now, as of this week, that is up over 40 in the last couple of days. But again, very dependent on what areas got moisture and what areas got higher temperatures to kind of kick off that growth. But we've seen it, and I've seen it affecting milk output as well and performance, where milk ureas have started to drop in the last couple of weeks and milk output then on the back of that. And it's down to really the lack of nutrient uptake by the plant, because it is slow to grow, it's cold stressed, so the uptake of nutrients hasn't been fantastic. So we've seen kind of performance hindered as well on the back of that, as well as grass availability being a problem and some people having to be forced to go back in with buffer feeding and feeding silage, which is not ideal. Focus really should be on consistency this time of year as the breeding season kind of kicks off over the last week or so.
That's what's out there currently for farmers, but and they're the struggles they're having at the moment. If we then look at, we mentioned the silage season is upon us, so what can farmers be doing, number one, to prepare for it, and number two, when the crop is being cut and put into silos or into wrap bales, what can farmers be doing?
Yeah. And yeah, the focus will shift now over the next 2 weeks to making high quality silage. And it's a massive cost that's incurred on farm every year. But it's the subsequent costs that are often forgotten about. The costs where the quality mightn't be fantastic of what is harvested. And then you have to meet performance and animal output requirements, you have to substitute in purchased in feed, which is obviously less efficient and more expensive in your back pocket. But I suppose what can you do now, I would be saying, is get out and assess what's going on in the field. A farmer said to me recently, everyone has good quality silage on their farm at one point. There's always 75 plus DMD silage in the field at some point. It's just the decision isn't often made in time to harvest that, and it's let the chase for quantity, I suppose, hinders the quality then that we have at the end of the day. So I'd be saying getting out in the field, assessing what's actually out there, what growth stage the plant is at. We want to be harvesting kind of at that three leaf stage where grass is at its optimum and that it hasn't gone too much stem, or you're a lot more leaf than stem, because that's where your quality is. And I suppose looking at data coming back in from the research centres, every week from mid-May that you delay harvesting, you're talking about losing between 2-3% DMD or dry matter digestibility, and that's really the feed value of your silage. And that every week you delay, you'll be losing out on that 2-3% of quality. So I would be saying don't delay where weather is in your favour. Act efficiently and get that silage harvested and into the yard, and don't sacrifice quality for quantity.
But if you look at fields that have been stopped for silage at the moment, they seem to be at least a week, if not 10 days, behind where they should be at this particular stage. We are now virtually at the 1st of May.
Yeah, absolutely. And in some cases, I've actually seen where, I suppose, that age-old saying of grass grows grass, where silage fields actually haven't been as hindered as those fields that have been grazed on a rotation. So some fields are doing fine, but again, assess what's going on, because as you said, some fields are quite stagnant and growth has been poor, and those fields will be somewhat delayed. But again, if we do get a pickup in growth, it'll all be dependent on Mother Nature, but if we get a surge in growth and there's plenty of fertiliser out in the field, we should get a pick-up and almost a compensatory growth. And that can happen quite quickly when the conditions do come right, and that field could turn around very fast. And if you miss the opportunity then, because you're not keeping your eye on it, you kind of miss that window of opportunity. So I would be saying, yeah, some fields are absolutely will be slightly delayed, but if things turn, and they should, depending on the forecast, that's looking quite positive at the moment, but to act quickly and to keep a very close eye on it, because things can turn around quite quickly, as we've seen kind of post-stressed periods like at the end of the drought in 2018 or last summer. After kind of a period of stress, there's almost a compensatory growth with grass. It's quite quick to turn.
Right, and I was having a chat with a farmer during the week, Maeve. He was saying to me that he put out his 90 units of urea when the weather was particularly dry, and he'd have lost some of that to the air, so he mightn't get that big push if the weather gets soft now.
Yeah, and again, from learnings from 2018 and other stressed times, and again last year, we've seen where nitrogen's out there, yes, if it hasn't been washed in or utilised, some of it will be lost. But a lot of it is actually still there in the soil. It just hasn't got taken up by the plant yet. So hopefully that nutrient and that nitrogen is there, and it'll be taken up by the plant when that plant starts growing again. So a plant has to be actively growing to utilise nitrogen or N. And that kind of general rule of thumb is that figure that you'd use 2 units of N per day when grass is actively growing. Now, if grass hasn't been actively growing over the last number of weeks, that figure is obviously lower. But again, like I said, when that growth does pick off, that usage rate should be higher. And that general rule of thumb is that 2 units of N per day. I suppose one thing to keep in mind when we talk about nitrogen and silage, and it's a thing that I often come across on farm in the back end of the year, is where silage pits are opened and there's high nitrates still present mm-hmm. in the silage. So to be careful of that where you're going out with late applications of N, that it's given time to use up that N, but also wilting and high sugars can be successful in getting rid of a lot of that excess nitrates before it's brought into the pit.
You've been basically there talking to me about the 50-day rule.
Yes, yeah. As such, that 2 units N per day.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and that makes sense. Talking then about agri-tech, what have you there that might be able to help farmers apart from good advice from yourself?
Yeah, and look, I suppose the best thing to do really is anyone that is questioning when they should cut or getting fields assessed or walked is to get in contact with your local distributor or sales advisor. But also we'll be reaching out to farmers over the next number of weeks in regards to silage additives and I suppose getting the most out of your silage. So there's often a lot of, I suppose, losses when it comes to silage harvesting, and then also some issues when it comes to feeding out, palatability issues, fermentation issues, that where if you're going, it's a big spend on farm, we want to make sure we save as much of that spend as possible, and then that we're getting good animal performance in the back of that when it's being fed out the barrier during the winter. So we will be talking to farmers on the correct use of silage additives and really the benefits that come from that. So if you look at some independent trials done on silage additives, you can see that there's an increase in animal intakes, and that's on the back of that, then they're getting an extra litre of milk per day, 0.09% of milk protein due to that higher intake because it is more palatable. It's fermented quicker, so less of that heating at the pit face when you put your hand into an open pit and you feel heat. And then also less losses. So about on average, if you look at the data that's behind it, there's about 6% less losses in silage pits that are treated with an additive compared to those that are not. So huge savings to be made. And again, I suppose savings in losses, but also then the added benefits of animal performance from there.
OK, and if anybody needs a little bit of assistance from you, how can they make contact with you, Maeve?
Yeah, I work closely with the sales advisory team and the distributors. So if you get in contact with your local distributor or sales advisor, they can point you in the right direction. They themselves will be fully competent in talking you through best practice advice as well. And also, if you visit www.agritech.ie, we have some information, blogs and some interactive videos on exactly what you should be looking for in making high-quality silage over the next couple of weeks.
OK, well, look at Maeve. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Listeners, that was Maeve Regan from Agritech and Nina talking about grass and silage and fertilisers and all the things that are on farmers' minds at the moment.